What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of your favorite NBA podcast, the Overstated NBA Show. We are back. We have Ethan Lane here with us, obviously producer Mikey. Brett Usher could not be with us tonight, even though there is no NBA on. I'm sure he is doing something with Twitter, writing something up, clipping some videos. I have no idea how he clips his videos in like 5 seconds after it just happened, but shout out to him. But we are back. So, Ethan, you are looking very dapper today. You have some sort of jersey on. You're trying to wear your Minnesota Timberwolves bucket hat, but you're so goddamn tall it won't fit over your headphones. So how are we doing, man?
I don't know how hat size factors into height, but there's probably some sort of proportional reaction that we can kind of talk about as it pertains to other things as well. But, you know, I made out with an absolute killing on Saturday. I came in to the debut of the city jerseys for the Minnesota Timberwolves, scored myself an awesome bucket hat, great giveaway, good, well, not necessarily a great hat to wear in winter, but at the end of the day, I walked out with my Naz Reid City Edition Wolves jersey, and I've been rocking it pretty much every day since I purchased it on Saturday. It's starting to get a little ripe, but as I'm sure we'll get into later, I'm not going to wash it until the Wolves lose again, because I've been wearing it every freaking game that we've played it. Granted, it's been two, but again, we're keeping it rocking. I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious.
I like it. We are recording this on a Tuesday. It is voting day, so that's why there is no NBA on. By the way, I do like how the NBA just says we are not going to have any NBA games on so everyone can vote. And college basketball is like, whatever, fuck it. We're going to throw 29 games on TV tonight. it's just America, man. Hey, we're not going to give everyone the day off, but we just do weird shit over here. So the last time that we all potted together, it's been a while. I know, Ethan, you were doing your division preview pods. I went on with Mikey. We did a little Bucks Philly preview. I was feeling pretty froggy about that. We were drinking. That was fun. Got to see Dame time in person. That was awesome. We really haven't, all three of us in a group chat setting, we've all connected along with Brett, so four of us, but we really haven't gotten on a pod and kind of gave our thoughts to how the season has gone or some takeaways that we've had, and we're going to go through a bunch of different stuff today. So Ethan, I will start with you. What is one takeaway that you have had from this young NBA season? I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, but hit me with it.
There's just so much that we can really dive into here. Obviously, there's just been storylines permeating the entire NBA over the past week and a half here. But I do want to start with something that was a little bit more recent. It's something we didn't get a chance to touch on, happened earlier in the past week here. James Harden, they finally freed him. I had predicted that Harden would stay on the Sixers for the vast majority of the season. We thinking we could keep it rocking probably towards the trade deadline, kind of see how the season plays out. Maybe he comes back a little bit healthy. Then we start to see the rigmarole of him not being allowed to come on that first road trip that the Sixers played with that team. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. We got our first case of an NBA team being investigated for whether or not they are actually able to hold out a player for an injury reason for a nationally televised game. I was hoping they'd come down with a little bit more of an aggressive punishment, but again, it's still a young rule. We're going to have to really see how that factors in. But James Harden, he is no longer a Sixer. He is an LA Clipper. The trade package for him, handful of picks, handful of role players, really just like a Swiss Army knife of guys that Nick Nurse is now able to use in and out of his lineups. And Steve, I'd really like to get your opinion on this. What was your first thought when you saw that tweet come across that was the price for James Harden and PJ Tucker? Guys like Marcus Morris, guys like Robert Covington, you know, just kind of like piecemeal scraps that the Clippers could throw on. I was hoping to see a Terrence Mann in there, maybe a couple more picks. What were your thoughts?
My first thought was, I have no idea. I still don't know. I have no idea why the Clippers didn't go after Jrue Holiday harder. I thought he fit their team way better. I don't really like the fit with James Harden on the Clippers. I do think it's a little bit sneaky underrated that PJ Tucker got sent to that deal with them. They could play a little small ball five with PJ Tucker. I mean, as old as he is and he doesn't shoot, I mean, he could still guard fairly well. I mean, he's one of the only players to give Jokic actual problems. So, I mean, I think that's a good deal for the Clippers. The Clippers sent a very clear message that they had to do something. They couldn't run the same group back. Too many injuries, too many non-playoff moments. They just had to do something. And we keep talking about it to death, and I hate that we talk about it, but Steve Ballmer is opening up that stadium. He wants as much star power as possible. I'm assuming that James Harden is going to get the most money he can get here with some sort of an extension to stay with the Clippers. Does that mean that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are also re-signing with them? I don't know. it's just, I mean, they got, what they get? They got two first round picks, right? They got one from the Clippers and then OKC. Of course, OKC is somehow involved in this trade. I guess I don't really think that we should be praising Daryl Morey. He's the one that wanted this trade to begin with. He made his bed with him. I don't know. It's just kind of like, whatever.
Yeah, like the assets they get back aren't like incredibly sexy. Like if you turn back the clock 5 years, you'd probably be freaking out at how this Clippers roster is constructed. And you also might look at some of these players a little bit differently. Like a guy like Marcus Morris 5 years ago, maybe a great player, maybe half a step slower than he would have been. A guy like Robert Covington, maybe he can resurrect his career. Nick Batum, Mikey Hall of Famer, just another kind of throw-in dude that they made to make the salaries work. The guy there for me,
I think they're going to like Nick Batum.
I think they're going to like Nick Batum too. I saw a fun tweet that somebody keeps looking at Nick Batum and thinks they're seeing the ghost of Al Horford.
I was going to interject and say that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's a lot of guys. Like, you looked at the Sixers construction and they were missing a bunch of like wings that they could throw out at people ever since they let guys like Niang walk. Korkmaz still trying to get the hell out of there. I don't know what he needs to do to get off that team, but maybe call Daryl Morey a liar at this point. But at the end of the day, you look at the guys that they got back in that trade. I'm excited for KJ Martin, again, a younger player who was kind of a throw-in trade during the offseason with the Rockets. Now he gets to play in Philadelphia. I love what Philadelphia has done with a guy like Kelly Oubre, where it looks like he's actually playing meaningful basketball for the first time in a really long time off the bench for them. The Sixers got a lot better by getting rid of James Harden, not only because of the guys they acquired, but they're also letting a guy like Tyrese Maxey absolutely cook. Like, I don't want to over-exaggerate because obviously last night they were playing the Washington Wizards, which might be the most entertaining team in basketball if you hate bad basketball, but 22 points and 11 assists for Tyrese Maxey last night. He's been absolutely cooking all year in that starting point guard position, and now that they don't have the pressure of Harden coming back, it makes it a little bit easier for that roster to kind of take shape and let the appropriate guys have the ball in their hands.
I agree. And I don't know how much further we could have had the James Harden thing going. I know when we talked, Ethan, your prediction was that Harden was going to be on there for a while. This was before he kind of started doing the stuff that he normally does and not showing up, then not showing up again. We talked about that game in Milwaukee. He wanted to come. It was like, you know, a sitcom on the tarmac, so to speak. I just think the distraction is gone. They can settle. I'm curious as to what they do. What kind of extension is Tyrese Maxey going to get? It's very clear that they want cap space going into next season, but how, we belabor this to death, can you waste another season with Joel Embiid in his prime here? Is there another trade that they have cooking? What are they trying to do? Trying to go inside the mind of the mad genius known as Daryl Morey, I would not recommend doing. But yeah, on the surface for Philly, it's a good trade. They got rid of him. The distraction's gone. Kelly Oubre is playing out of his mind to start the season. Who knows if he'll come back down to earth a little bit. But yeah, Tyrese Maxey, if you're betting, I would bet that he's definitely going to make an all-star team this year. Maybe even push for some sort of all-NBA team. We'll see. It's very early for that. But if he keeps putting up these kind of numbers and Philly keeps winning, I think he's going to have a good shot. And like I said, man, for the Clippers, eh, whatever. I mean, I don't think this really moves the needle for the Clippers at all. We'll see what happens. But again, if Kawhi and Paul George are healthy, the Clippers have a shot to win the title. If they're not healthy, eh, whatever. I don't necessarily know if James Harden changes that or not.
I feel like the Clipper question of health is always the first concern. And I feel like, and I talked about this when we did our division preview with Adler and Mikey here, we've never actually been able to see the Clippers as their full construction. Like, we talk about different teams having the same levels of consistency, the same sort of expectations with health. And obviously it's a lot of those healthy teams that win the title because you are able to really develop as a team and create that chemistry and do a whole lot of that. When you have four guys in Westbrook, Harden, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard, who are not quite, I don't want to say they're sunsetting their careers, but they're on the tail end, I'd be fairly comfortable saying. You have a lot of guys that I just worry about their durability, and obviously I am no great judge of durability as I predicted Brad Beal to play 82 games this year. But when it really comes down to it, I look at this roster construction. I look at this roster construction, and I'm just like, are there enough shots to feed all four mouths, A? And B, are we going to be in a situation similar to the Kyrie, Harden, Kevin Durant situation where they only played a handful of games together? Like, I don't see this foursome surviving over the course of an 82-game season. And we saw last night in that loss to the Knicks, lots of fits and starts, it's going to be really, really difficult to get the ball in these guys' hands repeatedly and over as best as they can. I don't see the chemistry developing. I guess you can rely on Teron Lue to really work on that, but I'm really pessimistic.
Yeah, same. You took everything that you said, I completely agree with. Like I said, man, it was when I got the notification. By the way, why do these notifications come at 1-2 in the morning when everyone is sleeping?
I have absolutely no idea. And that was the weirdest thing. Like I'm not out of REM sleep yet. I check my phone to turn the alarm off. I see a Woj notification. I think I'm blacked out. And then just all of a sudden it's a James Harden trade at 3 a.m. That's the perfect time to tell James Harden that he's been traded, because you know he's probably awake and soliciting some sort of local establishment, supporting local business, stimulating the economy.
For me, it was actually like midnight, and it was
the last time,
but it was cool because it was like the last time I checked my phone. And you kind of remember back to like the same thing happened with Paul George and Kawhi when they first got traded to the Clippers. And that was exciting. Like that night, I was like, holy shit. I was up for like 2 hours looking at my phone. I heard James Harden got traded, looked at my phone. I was like, I'll just go to sleep. I didn't give a shit at all.
Went straight to bed. But yeah, that's my main headline, man. Like, I'm really worried about how this Clippers construction is going to actually work. But I'm very excited for the Sixers. It's not something I've said often. I love Joel Embiid, Kansas alum. I think he's going to really earn his MVP this year as opposed to what he did last year. And like you said, Tyrese Maxey's a stud. And now he has the chance to actually have the keys to that offense. And Nick Nurse doing a phenomenal job so far. I love that coach.
Nick Nurse is awesome.
He is, man. He's definitely not going to run Joel Embiid to the ground playing him 35 minutes a game. That's definitely not going to happen, guys. Not going to happen at all.
Joel Embiid is played 32.8 minutes per game over the first 6 games. He's doing a good job so far. We got to worry about Maxey. We got to worry about Tobias Harris. They're up over 36, but we got to keep Joel healthy. You're right, Steve.
Nick Nurse has a little Tom Thibodeau in him. Every game is a Super Bowl. Every game matters. For me, man, I can't. This is going to sound very cliche, and we were talking before we were recording here. It's Victor Wembanyama for me, man. I cannot stop watching this guy play. I think I've had a couple tweets or a couple stuff in Facebook, the Overstated NBA group. You should join it if you haven't joined it. But like this, I think the Spurs should be on prime time every single game. Like, this dude is just so much fun to watch. He doesn't even have the ball, and I'm just sitting there watching him. What he did against Phoenix last week, 38 points, 15 for 26, 10 rebounds, and just like the going right at Kevin Durant. Obviously, everyone knows that Phoenix had a huge run to come back in that game. And Victor Wembanyama was like, nah, I got this. He's just unbelievable, man. Even I there's no words to describe him. I've never seen anybody like him in the NBA. I think LeBron, I think you can even put Giannis was a little bit later on, but we've seen physical, you know, ripped specimens before that just come in and do things that are just unbelievable. I don't think we've ever seen someone this skinny with this much skill, this much height, this much athleticism come into the league. I mean, can you remember a guy, Ethan, that has made this big of an impact already? I mean, we're not even a month into the season yet, and this dude already has the Spurs, I think, playing better than any of us thought they would be. I think a lot of people thought they would be pretty bad because they didn't sign Austin Reeves, because Austin Reeves was the missing piece for this Spurs team. But like, the dude, the dunks that he has, I mean, it's like this dude is just taking two steps from inside the foul line and jumping off both feet and just dunking it cleanly over 7-footers.
It's wild to watch guys jump from outside of the paint in any game and finish a dunk. Like, normally when a guard does it, you're pretty perplexed. When a center does it, okay, it's a little bit less impressive. But when Wemby dunked on Drew Eubanks in that game against Phoenix,
he killed him.
Him and KD were just trying to outdo each other. He jumped from outside the paint.
It's unbelievable.
Dunked on a man who's 6'10". And it's again, like you say, it's cliche to start talking about Wemby and being completely perplexed by him. And obviously the haterade is starting to be consumed around the NBA culture when it comes to nitpicking other stuff on the Spurs. But it is really hard to look at Victor Wembanyama and not be amazed. And it's gotten to the point where, like you said, you see stuff on Facebook, you see stuff on Instagram. I have people coming up to me at my job and asking me, what do you know about this Wembanyama guy? And I gotta explain to him that he's a Space Jam alien come to life, that he is probably one of the better prospects ever. And it's really, really difficult because, like you said, we wonder what other rookies have come in with this much hype and this much advertisement. It's the comparison is right. It was LeBron. Like when LeBron came in, there was so much coverage and so much press of what he was actually going to do on the basketball court that every game was appointment viewing. And like you said, man, like I wouldn't be surprised if those League Pass subscriptions are up and the Spurs Bally Sports Network had better make sure that it works every single night, because these guys are becoming appointment viewing. And I like the other parts of the Spurs too. I think Devin Vassell has looked absolutely awesome. There's some questions about the point guard position with them starting Sohan, but I'm with you, man. Wemby has just blown me away, and I'm not ready to quite put him in the upper echelon of NBA guys quite yet, but he might be there by the All-Star break.
I agree, and it's crazy because I remember, I think it was Zach Lowe that said before the season, you know, he might push for an all-defensive team already, and he's been phenomenal. I mean, he's leading the league in block percentage. I mean, is there a chance, Ethan, is there a chance that this guy could be flirting with All-NBA? Not defensive All-NBA. I'm just saying All-NBA. Can he flirt with a third team?
I don't think he can. I don't think
he can.
I can't put him on a third team quite yet, because again, like, it's the first year of the positionless All-NBA squads. I don't think the record's going to hold up for it. Obviously right now they're 3-4 floating around 500, but then again, so is everybody else in every conference for the most part. But at the end of the day, what it comes down to is just an understanding of where the league is at right now. Jokic is there. Embiid is there. Giannis is there. There's too many bigs to put him on an NBA team quite yet, but I'm very, very excited to see if he ends up there in the next 2 years for sure.
I agree with you, but if you told me that he somehow made it, I would not be surprised at all. This dude has completely living up to the hype. He's been phenomenal. I can't say, I'm just speechless, man. He went to the, there is no way that you could have put him in a better position with the Spurs than he is right now. It's the perfect team for him. It's the perfect coach. He has the perfect mentors. Every other day I'm seeing a picture tweeted out of him talking with Tim Duncan, David Robinson, Manu Ginobili, Mikey's favorite point guard of all time, Tony Parker. I mean, he's just got so much leadership that's around him, so much experience. Like, this kid is going to be good. And Ethan, let's be real. The real winner in all of this is us fans, because I'm going to give a shout out to the Twitter handle at Windy Talks Wemby, which is just absolutely hilarious. It's one of my favorite Twitter followers out there. It's just anything that you read, just read it in a Brian Windhorst voice and you will not stop laughing. I promise you. It's just, this dude's awesome, man. He's unfucking believable and I cannot get enough of him.
So Steve, what do you say? Because obviously one of the first understandings and the knocks against him comes down to his usage, comes down to his turnover percentage, comes down to his efficiency. What do you say to those haters right now that say that Wemby's getting the ball too much, not making the best decisions, turning it over too much? What do you say to those people?
That they probably don't enjoy the sun being out. Like, just enjoy it, man. Like, not everything is going to be perfect with this kid. He's going to be over scrutinized. There's going to be some games where he looks completely lost, and he's going to hit the rookie wall eventually. He'll probably miss some games due to some sort of injury. Who cares, man? Just enjoy it. If Brett Usher would hear, he'd have a smile on his face if I said, dude, just be positive and like basketball. That's all you got to do, man. Just enjoy it for what it is, dude. And right now, through the first couple weeks of the season, it's freaking awesome to watch.
Absolutely, man. Speaking of things being excited to watch, I know that
good transition. You're good.
I think you've had some struggles in the past week. I know that you've been very public about your dislike for certain cable broadcasting stations and your inability to watch your beloved Bucks, even in games where they go into Toronto and get absolutely dog walked. But I'm going to let you cook, Steve. Your list of grievances, your 95 theses on the Bally Sports Network. Go right ahead, man. Cook them. Get after them.
All right. So here's the deal, right? I think everyone knows this by now. This isn't that big of a secret. Diamond Sports Group, who owns Bally Sports, they've been bankrupt. And Bally Sports has just sucked for a while. It's terrible, terrible, terrible. I do not have cable. I do not have DirecTV. I have, like normal people in this world, I use a streaming service. You know, I have YouTube TV. They don't have it, so I have to use the Bally's app. And it has been down. It's been down throughout the first week of the season. I don't care what anybody says. They were doing it on purpose, because as soon as the game would be over, they'd have their stupid little tweet that they would send out saying, oh, hey, the issue is fixed. Everything's good to go. And then you'd go to the next game and it wouldn't work. It is absolutely terrible. I do not know why the NBA just seems to hate its fans. Just there's 13 teams that have been affected by this. The Clippers, the Pelicans, the Pistons, the Miami Heat, the Minnesota Timberwolves, Cleveland Cavaliers, Atlanta Hawks, Oklahoma City Thunder, Dallas Mavericks, Charlotte Hornets, the Bucks, Spurs, and Grizzlies. I have in every single one of those fans of those teams could not watch their team play because the Bally Sports app was down. Like, my dad has no idea what he's talking about because he's just like, oh, well, dude, I got Spectrum, man. It's on my TV. I can watch it. Yeah, Dad, I know. I know you can. You can't even figure out how to get the Netflix to work, okay? I'm glad that you can watch it. I'm trying to watch it off of an app right now. It is terrible. I do not know. And to me, we can talk about the agreement that they just made, which conveniently Bally Sports was back on live yesterday. We're recording this on Tuesday, so it was Monday night. They reached an agreement with the NBA. But, like, I do not understand for the life of me why the NBA hates their fans. This is just the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life. I understand that we're here to make money. I get it. But whatever you want to say about the Phoenix Suns, shout out to fucking Matt Ishbia, who said, fuck this. I'll buy my way out of this Bally Sports stupid bullshit. And I'm just going to air the games for free so everybody can watch the games. We can talk about, and I know Mikey has some thoughts about this. This just goes beyond Bally Sports too. If you live in Denver, you can't watch your team. You can't watch the Nuggets play. Imagine that. You have Nikola Jokic, the best player in the world, and you can't watch them play because of some stupid blackout rule that they have. It is the dumbest thing that I've ever seen in all of sports. What was it? When was I texting you guys? Sunday night dinner for my sister's birthday. We were at my parents' house. Obviously, Ethan, I know you're the same way. Mikey, you don't understand it, but Sunday is football day. I get it. Completely get it, right? There's one NBA game on in the afternoon slate of football, and it just happened to be the San Antonio Spurs, Toronto Raptors. Game went into overtime. We're going to talk about the Toronto Raptors later on today. You know what NBA TV was showing? NBA TV. They were literally showing this a replay of the San Antonio Spurs Phoenix Suns game from the other night. It just boggles my mind on what are we doing here? What are we doing here? I do not get it at all. Do not get it at all.
So I have a suggestion just to the NBA at large, and it pertains to like anyone who, like most of their fan base, I presume, is like cord cutters, people who have YouTube TV or Fubo or TV, whatever you have, what have you, or you're just, you know, streaming off of your parents' plan and you're using their DirecTV or their Xfinity, whatever you got to do. This is how most people are this day and age. It's just kind of the way things are going. But if you are like most of it, like all of us are, and most of our friends are subscribers to NBA League Pass, and you also subscribe to an app like Bally Sports app where you're supposed to be able to watch your team, how come they don't make an agreement where, like, when the app fails, they'll pull the blackout restrictions and you can just watch the team on the League Pass app? Like, why can't they just do simple things like that? Like, I look at, like, I'm not a big NFL guy, but the NFL makes it so easy to watch their games. Why is the NBA making it so much harder to find their content? And then they're worried about, you know, they're always like ducking the NFL when it comes to these like Thursday night games and stuff like that. If you want to be broadcast to more fans, why don't you make yourself more easily accessible? It's maddening to me. I live in Washington State, where most people already hate the NBA because of Clay Bennett and the Sonics. If it was easier to watch the NBA here, like the Blazers are blacked out. If it was easier to watch the NBA, they'd have more fans. They're so committed to becoming this like global entity that they are alienating their local fan bases. And regional sports networks are so archaic.
So when I was growing up, and you guys are probably on the same page, before the regional sports thing, they actually used to broadcast the Wolves on public television. They absolutely did. Yeah, so I used to be able to tune into the Wolves, tune into the like Twins, PBS. Catch a Wild game. Not quite PBS, but like a local Fox affiliate, maybe KDWB.
It was UPN here. It was UPN, and it was Channel 18.
Yeah, they I forget what channel they were on. I was a child for many years, but I don't remember most of them. But when it comes down to it, it was on KDWB, man. I could watch Friday Night SmackDown. I could watch the Wolves. I could watch the Twins. It was just so easy to get it on public television, and all you need was a goddamn antenna. And now we're at the point where I'm an Xfinity guy. I got a sweet deal. I got my fast internet, and I got my cable. I watch it, use it for the Wolves, and I use it for other random stuff that pops up whenever I need it.
But well, can I do day, just can I cut you off real quick and can I do my Cry Me a River like Steve was doing? I switched to Xfinity 2 years ago because, like Steve, Root Sports, who picked up the Blazers, they dropped from YouTube TV. So I was just like, I'd been a cord cutter for like a decade. And I was like, you know what? I'll go back to cable if it's to watch the Blazers. So for 2 years, I've been paying my cable fees. I have been a proud supporter of my team. I still pay for League Pass. I watch basketball nonstop. And then the day before the first preseason game this season, Root Sports and Xfinity declared that they had like a falling out, and they pulled Root Sports from my network. And I cannot watch Blazers games, even though I'm a League Pass subscriber and I have cable. I can't watch it anymore. And what they're telling me is I need to switch to DirecTV, or I have to pay $40 a month extra just to add the Root Sports premium package to my plan. And it's like, I've found other ways, guys. And it's like, it's gutter. It's super ratchet. Like watching these like illegal streams is the worst thing. They fall out all the time. Occasionally it'll be like an FBI raid, and they'll like fourth quarter, middle of the game, they'll just kind of like, they'll break down the door and, you know, figuratively, and they'll like pull the stream while you're watching a game, and then you have to go find a different one. It's just, it's such a corrupt way to live. I don't like it, but it's like, I'm going to do what I need to do to watch my team. And this is what they're doing. The NBA is forcing people to go to these backdoor markets and find ways to watch these games. Why shouldn't they be making it easier while also making money off of it? Because it's 2023. People know how to use the internet.
I could not agree more. And it goes back to the thing you brought up, the NFL. So I have YouTube TV, and I get that the NFL, well, now it's a three days a week now that the NFL has. I get that it's not every day, and I get the NFL is shorter, and they, you know, it's the biggest sport in America. But like, I have Red Zone. I can get what's the thing that I'm thinking of League Pass. What is the thing that I'm trying to say? Whatever.
Sunday ticket.
Like I can get.
Yeah. And you guys are the NFL guys. Come on.
Yeah. Well, that's my bad. Brain fart there. My bad. But I can get Sunday ticket, no problem, on YouTube TV. Like, it is so easy for me to watch NFL games, and I just do not understand. Like, which one of you said that the NBA cares more about its global reach? Like, I don't even think I would double down on that and say they care more about Twitter. Like, they care more about their clips going out on Twitter than any other league that is going right now, more so than the NHL, the NFL, MLB. Like, it is so stupid to me. Like, it is just a slap in the face to all of their fans. They raise their ticket prices so it's super expensive to go to games, and that, because they want you to watch it at home. They got a TV rights deal that's coming up that who knows where these rights are going to go. But like, the once again, the people that suffer the most is the local fans. And I just do not get it. Like, why do you care so much about an Anthony Edwards alley-oop dunk that goes on Twitter instead of like people watching it on their TVs? Like, I just do not. It's so mind-blowing to me on why they do that. I do not get it at all. And Mikey, I thought you brought up an awesome point. If this shit is down, we all have League Pass. I can't even watch them on League Pass because I live in Milwaukee, right? I mean, obviously, we all know that there's ways around that, but just lift the blackout restrictions. What are we doing here?
All they got to do, it'd be so easy. Just be like, if Bally Sports could just say, hey, we're down for the night, NBA, go ahead and lift the blackout restrictions so the people who are already paying money in two places, they're paying it for Bally Sports and they're paying it for the League Pass, just lift the blackout restrictions for that night temporarily.
Well, why? I just think it's a slap in the face to NBA fans. Like, I do not give a fuck that some 13-year-old kid has an attention span of 10 seconds, and that's the audience that you want to cater to on Twitter or TikTok or whatever it is. Like, I don't like it. It really, really irks me that I can't sit down and watch this shit.
When you're a diehard fan, you should be able to watch 82 games a year.
Yeah, I agree. Now there is some good news that came out of this. I think we can start to be a little bit positive. So basically what happened is the RSNs is everything that goes with the local market, right? The Bally Sports that we're talking about. So all the 15 teams that I just laid out, they are taking basically a 16% lower fee for their local TV rights this season in order to end their deals. So next season, there will be no Bally Sports. There will be no Diamond Sports Group. Like, that is completely done. And who knows what's going to happen, because the NBA is up for their rights deal. Shout out to the on Twitter, the r/Bill Simmons podcast. He does a really good job of kind of breaking down the TV rights deal. I mean, I think you're going to see ESPN ABC involved. I think you're going to see TNT involved. I think you're going to see NBC involved. I think you're going to see Amazon get involved. Like, I think I'm optimistic that it's going to be a lot easier for you to watch your favorite team next year. Like, it should not be this hard. I mean, I know some people that pay $20 a month for the Bally Sports app just to watch the Bucks and it goes down. You know, that's Bucks, Brewers, whatever. I just, it has never made sense to me. I understand the financial ramifications involved in it, but hopefully in this next TV deal, like, hey, like, it's a lot easier for local fans to watch their local team.
So when you look around to other sports, and you brought up Sunday Ticket and Red Zone for an NFL example, you looked at what Apple TV did with the MLB this year, just picking up a select handful of games to put on streaming. The NBA did that on HBO Max and TNT. They're broadcasting games there. Do you want to see something more like a public television palatable sort of exposure to the NBA? Do you want it kind of spread out across multiple platforms, multiple services, kind of like baseball and football are? Do you want it primarily on one streaming service? Like, what if Amazon says, we'll give you $50 billion to broadcast all of your games and absorb the League Pass app? What do you do there? Like, what does your perfect sports content consumption world look like?
Well, here's the bad part about streaming, right? Is that you're jumping from app to app. So if you have DirecTV or cable, like, you can literally just DirecTV. When I had DirecTV, I had all my favorites set up. So I could just go from League Pass to this, to this, to this. Like, I didn't have to go from app to app to do it. So that part kind of sucks. But to me, though, here's my ideal thing, Ethan. You make the local games available where that fan can watch it. I'm not saying, like, if there is a Minnesota fan that lives in North Carolina, like, okay, man, they might have to get League Pass to watch their team. That I completely understand. But for the local market or the local state, like, I believe, like, you should be able to watch your team for free. The second thing that I would do is, if I was the NBA, I would try to replicate, I think they could do a really cool job of it, what the NFL does with Red Zone, especially, I even think MLB does it. They do it way better than the NBA does it. I know the NBA has their wraparound on their NBA app that they can do, but I think every night the NBA should have on NBA TV, similar to what the NFL does with Red Zone, and just bounce around from game to game to game and do check-in, 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 no commercials. Let's fucking go. If there's a close game, like, hey, you know, like, what did we just have last night? Brooklyn, Milwaukee went down to the wire. Right after that, we go into Boston, Minnesota. Like, stuff like that, I think that they can do so much better just to get a more wider audience. It'd be really cool. They can market it really cool instead of just this blackout stuff that they do. Like, especially if the NBA has told us, right? They're telling us without telling us that their goal is, we want the young kids that aren't going to watch a full game, that are just going to sit there for 15, 20 seconds. Well, dude, an NBA type of Red Zone channel is perfect for that. What's wrong with that? You're putting the highlights out on Twitter anyways, but what's the difference?
My only fear is that they bring the roster from NBA TV that they use. Isaiah Thomas and, you know, Dennis Scott and stuff like that. It's just not inspiring. Like,
I don't disagree. Well, the cool, I will say, though, that the cool part is, and Ethan, you can, I know you're dying to get in here. The NFL just has Scott Hansen. It's one dude that's doing it all, and he's just jumping from game to game. And when you jump from game to game, you're letting the announcers that are doing that game call that game. Like, makes perfect sense to me, Ethan. You're the vein in your neck is popping right now. Go ahead.
You know, the vein in my neck was popping so hard, it honestly popped the thought I was going to carry, but I'll take this opportunity to still talk, and the life is good. But you talk about needing personalities, and you're right. The NBA TV personality is slacking. I think the best possible opportunity, if we're looking for guys, is HBO needs to pick up a handful of games, and we need to get all the smoke guys calling the games.
Yeah.
Just talking about stuff. Like, they experimented a little bit. Like, I remember back in the day, like, KG had a show that he just sucked at. But at least they were out there trying stuff, trying to build the brand, do it better. That's what you need. And honestly, I've seen it's a website where you can go and you can watch people talk about games. And the NBA released a deal for it because they want, like, those big name streamers, the podcasters, the whoever's, to actually be able to set up a room and talk about the games and have people join, just kind of similar to, like, what people do with gaming on Twitch. Like, it's something as easy as that, where people have needed to go to these elongated context, these really roundabout ways to be able to absorb the content. And when Mikey was talking about the crack streams, I remember, like, way back in the day when our NBA streams was still up on Reddit, that was the go-to spot. I felt safe knowing that whenever I went to Reddit, I know that I wasn't going to get a virus or the FBI to come kick down my door, because I could get a really good stream. I could keep it going. And then all of a sudden the NBA pulled the plug on it in 2019. And it doesn't make any sense. Like you said, like, you want to grow the game. I love what League Pass is doing with like the 10-minute condensed versions of the games. That's perfect. If you want to market to a kid with zero attention span, they can watch a 10-minute video if they're actually into it. I love that you could break it down by possessions. You could do all this cool stuff with it. Imagine what you could do if you partnered with someone like Amazon or someone with a whole lot more money, a whole lot more people in their tech.
Peacock, the cock.
Yeah, do what WWE did. Just get your app bought out by Peacock. You stream all. You can stream as many games. They do it with soccer. They do it with wrestling. They do it with combat sports. They do it across the board. And ultimately, the NBA is probably going to be like the penultimate holdout. I think baseball is going to be dragged kicking and screaming away from basic cable. But at the end of the day, like they do need to expand that base.
But to that point, though, even baseball, like if you go to MLB TV, like during the regular season, they bounce around to other games. It's not like what the Red Zone channel is, but it's not just them sitting there talking about a game from a night ago or talking about a game that just ended. They're literally bouncing around. And then maybe if something significant happened, they'll take some time, a couple minutes to talk about that significant event or significant win or whatnot. But like, they want you to watch the games. I just feel like the NBA has no interest in me, a 37 year old watching basketball. Like they don't like me, Mikey, Ethan, the NBA, everyone, NBA Twitter, like we, for whatever reason, are not their target audience. And it blows my mind, man. It really, really irks me.
All right, let's transition to something a little bit more positive. Unless you're a Boston Celtics fan. And that's to talk about
Eric Michael,
my Minnesota Timberwolves. Taking it to the best offense in the NBA through the first five games and holding them to 109 points in overtime while we won 114 to 109 at the Target Center. Still undefeated at home. Still, if not the best, one of the best defenses so far by net rating in the NBA.
Number one in defensive rating.
Thank you. Say it again. Say it again. Minnesota's what?
Minnesota Timberwolves are first in defensive rating and fourth in net rating overall.
Rudy Gobert, Defensive Player of the Year?
Rudy Gobert is back. Rudy Gobert is back. I sent a message to a handful of people after the Wolves dog walked the Jazz on Saturday night and said, I think we can say without a shadow of a doubt that Minnesota has now won the Rudy Gobert trade. Look, let's go down the players on that
Whoa.
Team. Up until Walker Kessler had a decent game last night, if you take out his 22-point outburst against Denver, he averaged less than 5 points a game over the first handful of games this season. Jared Vanderbilt's not on the team. Leandro Bolmaro's probably back at Argentina. Patrick Beverley's on his ninth team since getting traded to the Jazz. Look, Whoa. We can talk about the picks. The picks might be anything. They could even be a Victor Wembanyama. More than likely, they might be Keontae George, Jaime Jaquez-level guys. But again, first-round picks are as valuable as the team you get them from. Look, Steve, you're a football guy. Panthers' first-round pick this year that the Bears got, looking pretty juicy. That's a juicy pick they got.
Oh, for who? The Bears? Oh, the Bears will screw that up. I'm not worried about them.
Look, they might screw it up, but hey, that's potentially a top three pick. Look, the Cardinals tried to do the same thing. They said, hey, Houston, we'll take your first-round pick. Now the Houston Texans are on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. First round picks are only as good as the team that you trade with. And Mikey, you're going to be getting a lot of first round picks for Dame over the next handful of years. Look, are you excited, more excited about picks in the 20s? Do you just care that they're picks? Or did you really think that after the Wolves traded for Rudy Gobert, everyone just thought the Jazz were going to get top 10 picks next handful of years? No, we're not going to do that. We're way too far past that point to even think about doing that.
Right. And it's why you always value, in any package that you get, you always want to get like a young player back, because picks can be anything. Like, you're trading to a team, you're making them better, you're devaluing the value of their picks that they're sending you. That's why you always want to get at least one like potential blue chipper back in any package.
So if we look at who the potential blue chipper is going to be, obviously it's going to be Walker Kessler, and the history will decide if he's going to be any sort of consistent or great or good or average or Memento core or whatever sort of list of outcomes you could have.
Ethan is on fire right now. Ethan is on fire.
I've been having this percolating all day. Again, talking, people asking me about NBA at work. Nobody at my job cares about the NBA, but goddamn, everyone came up to me and said, Ethan, did you see Anthony Edwards last night? And I said, yes, I fucking did. I saw Anthony Edwards score 38 points. lock up Tatum on a crucial possession when he had five fouls. That 90-second clip you were talking about.
It was awesome.
He had five fouls and he dove for the fucking ball.
I've never
seen a guy like more angry to win in a Wolves uniform than probably KG. KG would have done the exact same shit. He would have gone straight at your best player, locked him up, and dared the ref to call that sixth foul to get him out of the game.
You know what was awesome about that though, Ethan, is that he picks Tatum clean. They have to do the jump ball. He beats Tatum in the jump ball, and then he gets the ball after fumble-itis Porzingis can't hang on to it. He gets the ball, brings it up the court, fires a rocket to Mike Conley, who nails a dagger of a three, dude. Like, that shit is awesome. Anthony Edwards is him. I do got to ask you, though, did anybody at work, though, did they come up to you and say, hey, what about that Carl Anthony Towns fella?
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah.
Talk about how inspiring.
In that same chat where I said we won the Gobert trade, I also mentioned that Cat was going to give me an aneurysm, and on the very next play, he fouled out of the game. And then I'm happy to say that I'm still walking this earth. I've dodged the bullet once again, but focusing on Carl Anthony Towns right now is something I do want to do. I would love to do it. The man played 28 minutes, had 7 points, 7 turnovers, and 6 personal fouls. Like, motherfuck. It's incredibly frustrating.
I texted you at one point, they should put Carl Anthony Towns in, and you texted me back, he is. Somebody should tell him.
Oh, man. Look, the stat line is, there's problems with it. And I will fully attest that he is maybe not a great reason to watch the Wolves right now. He's had some good games. He cleaned up against Utah. He played really, really well against the Utah Jazz, and he got emotional. I think the moment was a little too big for him against Boston. He was just getting frustration foul after frustration foul, and he's got to take that point out of his game. But at the end of the day, I think I'm ready.
Say it.
I'm ready.
Say the words.
I'm ready to admit.
Just say it.
That Carl Anthony Towns is going to be with us for the next 2 years.
Oh, come on.
Hey, you thought I was ready to trade him. I'm not ready to trade him. We're the best defense with two bigs in the starting lineup. That's not supposed to happen. Everyone told me it couldn't happen. Everyone said it wouldn't happen. It's only been 6 games. But we're the number one defense in the NBA with Rudy Gobert and Carl Anthony Towns and Naz Reid. How many million dollars, Steve? How many million dollars?
It's a lot, buddy. It's a lot.
It's a lot of million dollars, but I'd pay a lot of million dollars for a top one defense, baby. Let's go.
Oh my God, dude. I can't stop laughing. Hey, man, though, when Carl Anthony Towns is traded from your team next season, though, man, we'll be here for you. We'll have the podcast ready to go. You can cry. You can maybe you'll do a shots of joy. I have no idea, but we're here for you.
I want to put one out into the ether. Let's ask Steve about this one. Steve, what do you think about Pascal Siakam for Karl Anthony Towns straight up right now?
Stop. I don't want him. I'm asking Siakam.
I'm asking Steve. I'm asking a reasonable person.
Do we take Karl Anthony Towns to the airport right away? I mean, that's what I would be doing. Yes.
Especially if you consider Siakam's on an expiring, it could be like a trial period. And you have to figure out what you're going to do with your books in Minnesota. Like, if you can get off Carl Anthony Towns right now and potentially put Siakam on like a somewhat contender.
Okay, though, we're not trying
to send Cat to Canada. Cat doesn't want to go to Canada. Canada doesn't want Cat in Canada. No one in the country of Canada wants Carl Anthony Towns there. I'm going to talk about the Raptors again. I've got my League Pass report all ready to go. And every Raptors fan that you've put that trade in front of says, go fuck yourself.
They don't like it.
Come up with a better option than Toronto. Like, Masai Ujiri won't take just Cat. He's going to want Anthony Edwards. He's going to want Alex Rodriguez. He's going to want half the seats in the arena. He's going to want my firstborn son. He's going to want everything possible to just get one crappy player off his team. And that's where I'm at. Stop doing Cat for Siakam. That's tired. Let's get spicier with it.
To be fair to Ethan, it's only been 6 games. I do think you have to ride this out. We talked ad nauseum over the offseason and last season. Carl Anthony Towns was injured for a lot of that season last year. He wasn't around for training camp. Rudy Gobert even admitted as much. Anthony Edwards said there was nowhere for him to drive because there's too many people in the lane, like in the most Anthony Edwards way possible. Like, I think you have to ride this out. You have to ride this out for this year. And then whatever happens in the playoffs, I think you make your decision then. But to me, I've only seen 2 Timberwolves games this year, and that I also watched the last 5 minutes or the last couple minutes of the game and overtime last night. I do think Rudy Gobert is back. Like, I think that he is back to being Rudy Gobert from the Utah Jazz. He gets clowned a lot, which I understand in the playoffs. It doesn't always work. We talked about this as well on this podcast, but last season, I think, was a huge adjustment period for him. There was last year, Ethan was on this podcast last year saying, just annex Minnesota. They lost the trade. It was terrible. And a year later, he is saying quite the opposite, strictly because Rudy Gobert is back to being an all-NBA defensive player.
I'm being grossly misquoted. What I said last year was that D'Angelo Russell is bullying the shit out of Rudy, and Rudy's trying to do too much. And both of those things were true. Rudy last year was trying to do way too much. In the offseason, everyone's joking about him chucking up threes. Again, not his bag. Focus on free throws. You went 2 for 11 at the line last night. You gave me an aneurysm every time you stepped up to the free throw line. But this year, Rudy, he's back. He took 6 shots. He took 6 shots last night. Half of them were dunks, and he made all 6 of them. That's what I want from my Rudy Gobert. I want Rudy to contribute on offense. I want him to maybe grab some rebounds. Stop trying to catch the ball with your fists. I've seen you try to do that at least 3 times so far this season, where you just can't open your damn hands and catch a basketball. But I am so excited that Rudy is playing well. I'm excited that Naz Reid, my guy, my Jersey homie right here, my summer league best friend, he's playing so well. He's playing the best basketball of his life. Last night, Kristaps Porzingis smacked him in the face, and Wolves color commentator Jim Peterson said, if you want to be the number one public enemy at Target Center, you hit Naz Reid in the face. And I've never heard a crowd boo harder than Porzingis's review of that foul.
Absolutely. People normally like Porzingis.
I like Porzingis. I think he's a really great center.
Shut
he's
the like fuck up, Ethan.
A polished Luke Kornet. It's like if you put Luke Kornet in a photocopier and just turn the brightness up. Got a little bit more contrast. Kristaps Porzingis is great.
Hey, do you guys remember when we did our predictions podcast? And I believe I predicted that Anthony Edwards is going to make all NBA first team. Did I say first team or just regular all NBA? I can't remember, but damn man, 38 points against the greatest starting five of all time is pretty fucking good, dude. Pretty good, man. He is him. He is him.
So with his personability and his inoffensiveness, at least so far in his NBA career, has he taken John Morant's spot as the young face of the NBA?
I mean, for me, yes. As far as I still think John Morant is that dude, though, as far as appeal, as far as kids looking up to him, buying his shoes, things like that. But for me, yeah, dude, Anthony Edwards is fucking awesome at basketball, dude. He's really good. Really, really good. You can't, I don't think you can say enough good things about that dude. And like we said earlier, that 90-second clip in succession, by the way, like this wasn't like first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. Like he just completely took the soul of the Boston Celtics, which is just such a tragedy for them. But that was awesome. So freaking cool, Ethan. You got congratulations. Mikey had Dame. I have Giannis, and now I have Dame. But you have a dude. You have Anthony Edwards. It's been a long time since you've gotten him.
Hey, don't discredit Mikey here. Mikey has Shaedon Sharpe. That guy is playing out of his mind, and I wish we had more time to let Mikey cook and Shaedon Sharpe. Honestly, he might just take over the podcast and kick us off. All right, we're good to go. Hell yeah.
No. Some other day. We'll save it for another pod. I've got a 12-part series that's just Shaedon Sharpe segments, so... Yeah,
I really hope it's a true crime podcast about how he took all of Kentucky's money to not play a single game for them. It's a
serialized description of those events.
I like it. All right. Ethan, well, let's move. So we're doing a new segment. Or actually, Ethan is doing a new podcast. We're introducing this segment on our podcast, the Big Boy Podcast, for when Ethan goes off on his own and gets his fired up. It is called Ethan's League Pass Report. So Ethan, you are going to go around the NBA once a week and talk about a specific team. I know producer Mikey is going to be there with you. You hinted at it already. What is the inaugural, the first time ever, Ethan's NBA League Pass Report team is?
It's the Toronto Raptors.
Oh, man, Canada.
I'm very excited. I had my visa was about to expire, so I had to watch as many Raptor games as I could before that happened. This is my first time with NBA League Pass. This is my first time ever experimenting with the app. I've been jumping around on stuff. I'm listening to new color commentators I've never heard before. I've tried to adjust the volume in my television as quick as possible when I accidentally put on the Charlotte broadcast. It's been fantastic. I love every single minute of consuming the NBA on this app. And the first team I wanted to look at was a team that every time I say anything about the Toronto Raptors, everyone goes, well, you're just saying that. Obviously, you've never watched any games. Well, I watched some games. I watched, I'd say, 5 out of the 7 and then caught a couple of them on like a 10-minute report on League Pass. I feel good. Bally Sports app only went down on one of them. Shout out Steve again. But at the end of the day, this is a team that really, really excites me. And Mikey, you are going to bounce some numbers off me. Get us rolling here. The Toronto Raptors, how are they doing so far? Give us a little rapport, a Raptor rapport.
I think they're pretty typical to where they would have been most seasons and kind of what you think about the Toronto Raptors. 7 games under their belt, I believe, and they are 6th in defensive rating. You have kind of always seen them as a grit and grind kind of team. They're 25th in offensive rating, so that bears out. Surprisingly, they are 2nd in the league in assist percentage, but they are 2nd from last in pace. So they're not playing super fast. They're not getting up a bunch of buckets. This is a team that historically just likes to grind it out. They're about a middle of the pack rebounding team. And like I mentioned, 25th in offensive rating. They really seem to struggle when they move it to the bench. They are 27th in bench scoring. We know that they have Gary Trent Jr. coming off of the bench, but they're only getting 25 points per game off of the bench. And I think that one thing they wanted to move away from was, you know, riding the starters as much they had in the Nick Nurse era. And they're not bearing many results from that as of now. But the highlight for this team right now has to be 7 games of Scotty Barnes. This is his breakout season. He's at 36.4 minutes per game, 22.5 points per game, almost 10 rebounds a game, which is staggering. Almost 6 assists per game, 2.1 blocks per game, 1.1 steals. He's got really good efficiency. He's shooting on 61 true shooting percentage at a 26% usage. He's got a 23 PER. And I think it's safe to say that this is officially Scotty Barnes' team in Toronto.
Scotty Barnes has been absolutely fantastic to watch. And first game of the season, Wolves Raptors, let me tell you, what a rock fight. 97-94 at the end of it all. Neither team looked completely in sync with each other, but the Raptors play a wonderfully chaotic brand of basketball that Darko Radjakovic has really brought over to this team. He has absolutely instilled a defensive identity for this team. I practiced that in the mirror for days. That just rolls off.
You notice I didn't say it in the report, in my part of the report. I was like, I'm staying away from it.
Nailed that last name. Nailed it.
I call him Marko Jarić, and I was in good shape. But
with a glass of drinking a glass of whiskey, and he just nailed that. Now I know why he's drinking the whiskey. Nailed it.
Look, one finger of whiskey and I'm on my game. 2 fingers and I'm in trouble. Pause.
Oh, I've drank. You can drink.
Comes down to Scotty Barnes, man. Scotty Barnes has looked absolutely awesome. Like, you talked about how he's improved every statistical category of the first 7 games. Again, it's 7 games, but he's up 7 points per game. He's averaging nearly a double-double a game. He's up to 6 assists. He's increased his three-point shooting percentage, which was 28% last year. He's up to 42% now on 2 made threes a game versus less than 1 on average across the start of his career. And that's where that 6 points comes from. His shot is falling, and his shot looks really good. And Steve, you can probably attest to the no-no-no-yes quality of Giannis Antetokounmpo whenever he pulls up for 3. And I'm starting to see that fade a little bit with Scotty Barnes this year. He's looked in complete control. OG Anunoby is another guy. He's looked absolutely fantastic. He's their second leading scorer on the team right now. He's their third leading scorer behind Dennis Schroeder. Weird. He's averaging 16 points a game, and he's starting to look like not a throw-in trade deadline candidate guy that we were trying to put him in every single trade, send him to the Grizzlies, send him to the Clippers, send him to the Suns, send him to the wherever. At the end of the day, like, he's starting to look like a really, really solid role player for this team. And again, he's only 26 years old.
Can I throw one OG Anunoby stat out there that I think bodes really well for the growth of Scotty Barnes?
Absolutely.
I think OG is playing off of Scotty better than any other player on the team. Like, if you're just going to say, like, Scotty, go out there and this is your team. OG Anunoby is attempting the most corner threes in the NBA right now, 3.2 per game.
Ooh.
And he's hitting almost 50% clip. He's got a 67% true shooting percentage. I think a lot of people were worried that OG Anunoby was going to be this player that demanded the ball more. And he seems to be playing off of the ball better than at any point during his career, which cannot be said about someone we talked about previously in this podcast, and I think you're going to bring him up next.
Yeah, absolutely. OGs, but looked fantastic. And the two of them together on defense has actually been the biggest part for me. Those guys, there's a certain switchability that they have now that they didn't necessarily have with Fred VanVleet. And I know we can talk about Dennis Schroeder as maybe not a phenomenal defender, but he's looked scrappy when he's needed to go out there. And honestly, it's kind of like guys like that who come into a team and can kind of help instill like a grittier culture that a new coach kind of needs. And you've started to see that with OG and Scotty. Like, they're lockdown wing defenders so far this year. They did a phenomenal job guarding against Anthony Edwards really, really, really well across the board. And Steve, I know you didn't see a whole lot of that Bucks game, but man, I didn't get to watch one second of it. They were throwing crazy looks at Chris Middleton, at Dame Lillard, keeping everybody on their toes. There's that switchability. There's that culture that Radjikovic brings from a team like Memphis.
Hey, did it again.
So nice. I said it twice. And at the end of the day, you look at all these players, they're a good accumulation of parts, but there's one part that's sticking out, and it's a part that they maybe should have traded coming into the season, but I understand why they really didn't, and that's Pascal Siakam. He's struggled with his shot. He's currently averaging only 15 points a game on 14 attempts from the field. He's looked halfway decent, but again, there's just it's not what you would have expected from him. Like, again, I didn't think Scotty was going to be ready coming into this year. I didn't think he was going to take a massive leap to the 7 to 8 point per game swing that we've seen so far. I thought Pascal's still going to be that guy, but he looks a step slow.
The spots he's getting his shots are different, and it's clear because Scotty Barnes is taking those opportunities from him. I think that it's just kind of that's how the pecking order of things go, and that's the way this team is built. But yeah, Siakam, like you alluded to, is 14 field goal attempts per game. He's down from 18.5. His scoring's down from over 24 points a game to 15 a game. His usage is down to 20% from 27%. He's at the lowest true shooting percentage of his career, but also the highest three-point attempt rate. So he's clearly just not getting the kind of looks and opportunities that he wants. You've got to figure that come the trade deadline or the offseason, he's not going to like the way things are trending for him if it keeps up like this. And I see no reason for the Raptors to actually switch directions and go back to Siakam.
Yeah. When it comes to Scotty's development, I alluded to the fact that we need to see more of point Scotty. And I think we've started to see that in slight spurts. Schroeder's done a phenomenal job playing off ball. He will be the primary ball handler in a lot of possessions. But when Scotty has the ability to distribute, to make plays, to have that ability, and now has the ability to keep defenses honest with a knockdown shot, it's made it a lot harder to defend a team like this when you don't have to worry about one of their better starters being a non-factor from three-point land. Like, there's more things that you can do as an offense, and it's going to be interesting to see what Radjikovic does with all the different permutations of their offense, all the different ways that they can bring guys off the bench. They've got to find three or four bench guys, because honestly, I think they've got one and a half right now. I'm not sure where he's going to find that, but I think it's going to be interesting to see where he does. And I think a Siakam trade might have to be a part of that. And I just don't know what you can do with a guy who's making $38 million this year. That's a hard contract to move at a deadline. And again, you wonder if the Raptors are really going to have any sort of ability to move a guy before they get nothing back for him.
Ethan, I have a question for you, since you've kind of been watching this team a little bit and you did this division preview with them. Is Toronto more likely to be fighting for a top six playoff seed, or are they more likely to be fighting for the play-in?
I think they're going to be back near the bottom of the play-in. And again, we've taken there are other teams that I'd love to talk about as we get further into the season that have taken those next steps in the Eastern Conference, whether it's a team like Orlando, or the Hawks have started to look good. The Hawks completely eviscerated my Wolves a few nights ago.
Join the club, buddy.
The Pacers have started to show some flashes. Maybe the Heat turn it around. Like, again, there's more teams that I would put in front of the Raptors, but like you said, there's a move I think to be made, because I think they need to upgrade from their point guard position if they're not going to fully invest in Scotty. I think Schroeder is better in spot minutes off the bench, because Malachi Flynn, I hate to say it, he's not it. And they need to fill out with some buyout guys on their bench, or guys need to take next steps. You mentioned Gary Trent Jr. there, Mikey. Gary Trent Jr. is giving me Jalen Noel last year vibes, where last year he was a knockdown scorer, played really well, got a halfway decent contract, but then Jalen Noel despite didn't really get like a big contract the way that Gary Trent Jr. did, but he just went absolutely cold. And I'm just wondering if they kind of overpaid for a Malik Beasley type of player where you can maybe expect him to come off the bench. But at that cap figure, you're starting to wonder if he doesn't find a shot, where do you go from there if you're looking at that Raptor bench?
Good stuff, Ethan, man. I really like the segment that you're going to do. Do you have a team that you're going to do next week, or are you just, do you have it like mapped out? Like this week, I'm going to do this team. This next week, I'm going to do this team. Do you have like the first five teams that you're going to do?
I'm going to pivot. I'm going to bounce back conference to conference here. I'm going to pick a team from the Western Conference to do next. And I'm going to pick a team that is the only one win team in the Western Conference right now. And that is the Memphis Grizzlies. I need to figure out what's going on with this team.
I gotta
figure out what's wrong with the Grizzlies. Every Grizzlies fan has blocked me. So I'm very interested to see if
to pump those ratings. Form,
I can reach out to them more. I gotta figure out what Marcus Smart's up to. I gotta see what Luke Kennard's doing. I gotta see if Jaren Jackson can find any rebounds. That's my next report. I'm going deep dive into the Memphis Grizzlies for next week.
Yeah, Marcus Smart seems to be, in some of the games that I've seen, he seems to be doing okay. I'm curious to hear what your analysis is going to be. I just can't believe this team is this bad without Steven Adams. I mean, they are just like really bad.
You're right. Steven Adams is the only major player that they're missing. There's no other player that would impact the Grizzlies' chances of winning at any point by not playing in these games.
Smart ass.
But yeah, I'm going to deep dive into the Grizzlies. They've got two in-season tournament games between now and the next time we record. I still don't know what the in-season tournament is. I'll save that for the next one. I'll do a report.
Oh, dude, you don't know what the in-season tournament is? The Milwaukee Bucks just have the best overall, the best defensive rating in the mid-season tournament. Suck it, Ethan.
Just like Rudy Gobert has career-high play-in tournament numbers from last season. I love statistics, man. They can just really say whatever you want them to.
They're so awesome, dude. Yeah, man. So shout out. We want a full, we'll get out of here with this, man, but we want a full breakdown of John Conchar. Please give us everything you know about him. I want his biography, everything, his Bumble username, everything. Don't maybe his OnlyFans account. I don't know.
John Conchard is his OnlyFans account name.
All right, everybody. That is it for us. This was super fun. We will be back in the next couple days, man. We're going to be pumping out some content for everybody. We appreciate everyone listening. As always, you can find us on Twitter, Overstated NBA. You can find us on Facebook, Overstated NBA. Come join it. The discussions are lively. There might have been a Celtics meltdown last night. It's pretty damn cool. Join the community. Live life. Go NBA. NBA, stop hating your fans. For myself, producer Mikey, Minnesota Ethan, peace!